Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight-loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight-loss. PlushCare.com/weight-loss.
Well, hello, hello. You're listening to The Sound of London. This is Londonist Out Loud. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe, and this week's show is all about food of a very specific sort. We'll be heading off to Chelsea in just a moment. I've been looking for a particular Facebook message that I was sent in the last couple of weeks. I can't find it anywhere, so I can't greet the sender of this message by name. But I've got the text of the question. The writer says, "Hello, I've got a question that has bothered me for some time. While renovating Leicester Square a few years ago, hand plaques of famous people have been removed and were put somewhere else. Do you know where?" And I put this question to the team at Londonist Towers, and they drew a blank, which is quite unusual. And so they're going to investigate that and turn it into an article. If that's a question that interests you, keep your eyes peeled. And if you happen to have the answer, then please, please, please get in touch. And probably best to do so anonymously to save me the trouble of having to forget your name as well. The show this week is sponsored by Audible. If you haven't yet signed up for your free trial of Audible, then have you seen the time? Come on, this needs to happen. Audible.co.uk, you get a free audiobook of your choice if you register for a one-month free trial. There are over 150,000 audiobooks to choose from. The 30-day free trial means you get to choose a free audiobook. It's yours to keep whether or not you decide to cancel in the trial period. And there's more good news. If you trialled the service over 12 months ago, and well done if you did, thank you, the good people at Audible are giving you the chance to get your hands on another audiobook for free. So sign up at www.audible.co.uk/Londonist. And I really do mean that. Listener, if my happiness means anything to you, please sign up for a free trial. As we slide easily into this week's episode, a quick shout out to Emma Bridge, who frequently comments on Facebook. Thanks, Emma. Hope you enjoy this one.
"Hey, baby, let me take you down to a place of strange sights and sounds you ain't never seen the like before. Just a stone's throw from your front door.
Well, hello, hello from the Good Life Eatery on Sloane Avenue, just around the back of Sloane Square, Southwest 3. And we're at a slab wood table against a raw brick wall. And we've achieved a gluten-free gathering here, a gluten-free gathering of two people, the other being Kim Smith, who is the head of a company by that name, Gluten Free Gatherings.
Hi.
Hello. I'm terrified of today's interview.
What's that?
I don't know what I'm talking about today. Quite literally, I've no idea. I couldn't point a gluten out in a crowd.
That's not a surprise. If you don't have to eat gluten-free, you don't need to worry about it.
No, right. In fact, I was reading up on your website. I was trying to bone up and sound vaguely intelligent on the subject. And it's worked this well so far. And on your website, you list not only one or two things that I have heard of, like celiac, like gluten-free, but you also mention a whole load of other things. They sound very refined and specific positions on the gluten-free spectrum, I presume. Is it worth unpacking in broad strokes what gluten-freeness is all about, what gluten intolerance, celiac disease, all of that stuff?
So basically, one of the main diseases that causes people to eat gluten-free is something called celiac disease, and that's an autoimmune disease, so it's not an allergy or an intolerance, where the body just can't process gluten, which is found in wheat, barley and rye. So it's a protein, and it causes the body to attack itself. So the only cure for the disease is to eat no gluten. So
I've got a lovely image of you eating a slice of gluten bread and punching yourself in the face.
Yeah, pretty much.
You don't mean that.
I can feel like that, totally.
What does it feel? What actually happens?
Oh, okay, so this is the pretty bit. So
is this going to be awful? Yeah. Sorry, this is really indelicate.
You want to talk about over breakfast? But no, I mean, some people have kind of upset stomachs. Some people can be sick. I ended up having one of the lesser known symptoms, which was joint pain, mouth ulcers. You can get something called brain freeze, which is like you get really foggy, kind of can't concentrate. And some of the symptoms are actually really nondescript, and it's not until you put them all together. It wasn't until I got diagnosed that I realised actually I had been quite unwell, but there were just little niggly things that I dealt with on a daily basis. So yeah, so the symptoms are quite far and wide, which is why it's quite hard to diagnose.
This sounds dangerous for me. I remember a wonderful quote from a Jerome K. Jerome book, in which one of the characters, who's a hypochondriac, reads a medical dictionary, and by the end of it is convinced that he's got everything except for housemaid's knee. And I'm now wondering whether I'm also
yes, you're definitely gluten intolerant.
I've got a bit of a twinge in my knee for sure. Yeah. So we're at the Good Life Eatery, which looks like a magnificent place. You've eaten here before?
Yes, I have. Yeah, because it's gluten, they do lots of really good gluten-free options that are actually something you want to eat.
So I guess the first thing to do is try and set out the landscape of a gluten-free London. It immediately became apparent to me, in an area like this, which you, I guess you would expect to get all sorts of different eateries catering for all sorts of different tastes and requirements, actually there are precious few. There's the Eatery around the corner, there's the Eatery here, not much else. No, in this part of town.
In this part of town? Yeah, there are pockets, actually. So I don't know that many rounds here. If you go to many restaurants, so now, there is a law that says that you have to know which allergens are in the food that you're serving. So
that seems reasonable, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, you'd want, yeah, well, some people are really objective to being able to know what's in their food. So you have to be able to say whether there's gluten or wheat in the products you're serving. So you should be able to eat, should be able to, technically, eat safely, but it's not always so easy. So it's about knowing, finding the places. So a lot of the chains now have really good gluten-free menus, but I'm all about finding the smaller, independent, interesting, really good quality places that are actually worth, that you want to eat. Because some gluten-free food is not very good.
No, I was trying to evaluate through the shop window here whether I would want to be tucking into a gluten-free cake. There's something a little bit deflated looking about them. Is there an ingredient that makes them rise missing?
It's the gluten. So gluten is a protein, and basically when you make cakes, you make breads, that's what gives it the structure. So without that, you have to find things to replace it. So you have to use gums, or some people use eggs and things like flaxseed, and you can do different things. It's gluten-free cookery is a bit of a real alchemy. You have to think differently to conventional cooking. But so it is missing something kind of crucial, but it's actually quite straightforward. Cakes in particular are quite straightforward to make without the gluten, so you don't need so much rye. You can use eggs quite easily.
So what you wouldn't want, presumably, is a gluten intolerant in combination with something else?
Well, with other allergies, it's really, yeah. It's actually really common. Gluten and dairy intolerances are quite common, because basically when the body can't tolerate the gluten, quite often it develops into a dairy allergy as well, or a dairy intolerance. It's quite common.
Oh, I'm totally fascinated by that. How does that work?
I don't know.
So the body goes, I don't like this thing.
Yeah. Oh, I think this is
so it,
so
what, it like sulks? Is that it?
No, it's just so damaged, because you're talking about the lining of your gut. So it's been totally, totally damaged. And basically it just reacts, you know, because we shouldn't eat that much dairy anyway, you know, if we haven't evolved in that way to eat that much dairy. So yeah, so it just kind of goes, you know what, I'm not doing this anymore, which is fair enough really. So yeah, it's quite common. It can disappear, but it is quite common. So yeah, so dairy-free, gluten-free cakes are like, okay, what is in this? There are lots around though.
It occurred to me that I don't know, and you do, what proportion of people are likely to be listening to this podcast and have a personal stake in it.
Lots of us. But they say the Celiac UK, the charity that kind of supports people with celiac disease, and also with non-gluten sensitivity. They estimate that probably 1 in 100 people have either have celiac disease or it's undiagnosed, because it's quite hard to get diagnosed. But also the alternative way of thinking about it is the people that have a stake in it are that also your family. So I'm married with 2 children. We're going out to eat. We're going to eat somewhere where I can eat something nice and somewhere I want to eat, and I know I'm going to be able to eat safely. So actually there are 4 of us with a vested interest. Or if I'm going out with a group of, you know, on a hen do, I get to kind of make an indication as to where I'd like to go, because then I can eat there safely. So actually there's a lot of people that have a vested interest in where other people who are gluten-free can eat. But also there's the whole wave of the well-being kind of community that's interested in no gluten, no sugar, no dairy, no meat and things.
Is this the clean eating?
The clean eating, I don't like that term. There's no bad food. There's no bad food, it's about moderation. But at the same time, I don't have an issue with the clean eating well-being movement, because it's raised the awareness of gluten-free and the need for gluten-free products and people wanting those. There's more people wanting those because they've got a different reason to eat it, but they still want it. So they have really helped us in places like the Good Life Eatery. Actually, it's more out of a paleo wellness thing rather than someone's a celiac who totally can't eat any gluten, so it's totally benefited us.
That term paleo caught my attention. That's not a caveman diet thing, is it?
Yes, the caveman
it
diet.
Is
yeah. It's great.
What would I need to be eating if I'm a caveman?
So basically it's nothing that's been processed. Technically there's a spectrum of paleo, I would say. So it includes no grains, so nothing that would have been farmed. So it's very kind of primal. It's meats, it's fish, it's berries and fruits and vegetables and things that would have grown more naturally. So moving away from processed grains and things like sugar. Yeah, so.
You know which bit of your life I'm about to ask about, right? You used to work in a ready meals factory.
I did. I've worked all over the place, yes.
I really
it
want to...
my education.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah, before that, I was at a flavour house as well.
Okay, well, let's do these then. Okay, where should we start?
Start at the beginning. So I graduated from university with a degree in food and consumer studies. So I studied everything to do with food. But basically, the jobs were in the large-scale manufacturing world. Food manufacturing. So I ended up working for a flavour house. So I would be making chicken taste more like chicken after it had been processed, because once you process the food, it's been kind of, it's not as tasty, or the quality you're starting out with to begin with isn't as good as, it isn't as flavoursome, maybe.
I've got like a chemistry lab in my mind.
Yeah, I was white coat, hair net, yeah, like the whole, yeah, playing around with powders and liquids that didn't resemble food. So, yeah, that's where I started out. So making things like the flavoured rice cakes, so putting powders all over those, making them taste like blueberries or something.
Can we have some deep, dark secrets of that industry?
You don't want to eat it.
Yeah, well, maybe not. No, come
on. I mean, it's an amazing industry, because it's creating flavours that are mimicking what's in the natural world. So it's pure science, which was really not my territory. I was looking to kind of baking cakes. But it's, for me, it's too processed. It's too far away from what food should be. Yeah, and I was working in a ready meal factory as well. Yeah, that was my place.
Well, no, hold on, you don't get off the hook that lightly. So yeah. You've got, I don't know, some chicken crisps or something that don't currently taste of chicken.
Yeah.
How do you go about making them taste like chicken?
So you get lots of different types of chicken flavours. So you get something that's a chicken thigh, or a roasted chicken thigh, or a chicken stock flavour, and maybe
so actual chicken at this point.
No, not chicken, powders.
What are the powders though?
Factory, like, I don't even know. I wasn't allowed to know. Yeah. So you get all these different profiles of chicken flavours, like powders and liquids, and you blend them together in a way that would make it taste like a really lovely chicken.
But despite what you were saying about allergens, you've got no actual idea what goes into the flavouring.
It was pure chemicals.
Nice. I like the beaming smile with which you say that.
Yeah, it feels like a lifetime ago. It's not food. It wasn't food.
Is there any element of that that should worry the average consumer? I mean, is it? Do you consider it to be bad for you?
Personally, I do. Yeah, I don't think it's food. I think it's overly, massively, massively processed. I'm of the Michael Pollan school of thought, who is an American intellectual around food production and the food world, and he says, eat food and your grandmother would recognise to be food. And if you look at, particularly in Free From, like so many of the ingredients you would look, I should have brought you something to look at, you know, a bread. Well, bread would normally be made from, you know, wheat, flour, water, yeast, maybe sugar, a bit of salt. You got like 20 ingredients and you kind of, you know, methyl hydrocelluloid, I don't even know what half of these things are, and I've worked in that world as well, you know, so I don't think it's particularly good. And actually, when you have a dietary issue, you know, I have a digestive disease technically, and to be putting all that into my body, which is not 100, wasn't 100%, I don't, it's, for me it's counterintuitive. So it was my education, and as a result, I now seek out places that are much, use more natural ingredients and use, don't use flavourings and preservatives and all these things that we don't really know what they're doing to our bodies. Yep. Joanna Blythman is the person to talk to about that.
What does she do?
She's an investigative food journalist, and she really unearths and really gets to grips with what is in our food. And yeah, she's the guru on it.
I couldn't believe how much sugar there is in bread.
Yeah, well, in gluten-free bread.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, well, it's one of the issues. It's interesting that over the years, the free-from bread used to be very, very high in fat, because you were trying to replicate like a real like light supermarket spongy white sliced bread, and you're doing that without the gluten, which is what gives it that lightness and that kind of texture. So basically one of the ways you can do that is by adding a lot of fat, a lot of salt and a lot of sugar. Also, because then it makes it taste nice, because without it, it wouldn't taste very nice. So yeah, for a long time, the bread, a lot of the gluten-free brands were very high in fat and also sugar as well. But it's one of the biggest problems is that there are a lot of free-from products, which are perceived to be healthy, aren't healthy at all. You know, if you compare a gluten-free crumpet with a free-from crumpet, it's definitely not better for you.
The amount of sugar that's packed away into just about everything. Well, we've had the famous pasta sauce thing going on just very recently. So what's the deal with sugar?
It makes things taste nice. That's simple.
But you shouldn't need that in a tomato sauce, should you?
When I make a tomato sauce at home, I put a pinch of sugar in just to balance the acidity. But I wouldn't put 3 or 4 tablespoons in. Processing's a really harsh, when you're making a tomato sauce in a factory, in a massive vat with tomatoes that have come from God knows where, the whole process is not conducive to flavour, so they add things to make it tasty. Also, the sugar's a preservative, so they probably add it for that reason as well, make it last longer.
I can't resist sticking my finger into the ready meals business and wiggling it about. Can you reveal all?
I used to work for a ready meal factory for one of the British supermarkets. We used to make ready meals, so I was in an Italian ready meal factory where we extruded the pasta, so we made a lot of fresh pasta, but we also made ready meals. To be fair, those ones were actually really okay. The recipes were what I would say clean label, so there was no added preservatives, colourings, flavourings. It was all as you would make it at home, but just like a humongous scale.
This is such a relief already, because I know which company you're talking about, and I live off those particular meals.
Yeah.
Oh. What about further afield?
Further afield, yeah. I wouldn't know.
you know.
Yeah. It's all a really big process with ingredients from far and wide, and it's not glamorous. You know, you've got a machine going squirt, putting, you know, 30 grams of white sauce on top of your lasagna. It's not crafted by any means, and it's just millions.
Do you find yourself able to consume a ready meal now?
No, I can't consume ready meals anymore.
When was the last time you touched one?
That's a good question. I don't know. Like a lasagna type. Well, the thing is, though, Free From, there's not very many. Only recently, there's a couple of the retailers have launched more ranges. So they've got things like, there's a Free From macaroni cheese, there's a pizza. They're just not very good. They're not as good as something I can make at home. I mean, I'm the other way around. I've worked in food my whole career, and it's my hobby and my job, and so I like to be able to make the stuff as well. So I'm more of a case of, I would go on a cookery course, and I've learned how to make gluten-free baguettes so that I can have really nice fresh bread at home. I mean, obviously I buy things like pasta, but yeah, I just don't buy things. They just don't taste of anything. They're not It's like when you eat, you know, if you have a curry. Like, I have, if I have a takeaway, it's a curry, because that's one of the safest gluten-free options. And if you have them too often, they kind of lose, their luster, and they're not as satisfying, you know. So I understand in the need of emergencies and stuff, but not really my thing. Sorry.
So, well, I'm almost wondering whether to impute a causal link then. You're working in this world of horrible ready-made food, and then suddenly you get celiac disease. I mean, was there a connection?
Yeah, I think there was. Well, there's a joke in my family that I made myself celiac though, because I kind of like bread and baked good and patisserie products and cake.
You OD'd?
Probably. It's quite possible. No, it is a joke in our family. There is a school of thought that actually, so I'm going to bore you with the science. So the mass-made manufactured bread is made really quickly. So if you're making a loaf of bread at home, it would take the best part of a day to kind of rise and prove and things. Whereas mass-produced bread is made really, really fast. It's a process called the Chorleywood process, and basically they're able to force the bread to rise really quickly. Now, there is a school of thought that that has exposed gluten to the body in a way that we would never have had it. So there's a whole trend, for kind of slow rise sourdough, kind of super, super natural slow risen bread. That's how we would have made bread before the kind of 60s. And there is a feeling that that has maybe been a cause to the kind of weight, the increase of gluten sensitivity and gluten intolerance. So jokes aside, it could actually, and also the volume we eat, you know, people have toast for breakfast, a sandwich for lunch and pasta for dinner, and it's a huge amount of wheat, and actually it's not good for us to be eating that much wheat. So that maybe, jokes aside, that probably could be the case.
So this is a rising phenomenon then?
Well, there's certainly the gluten intolerance and just the awareness of how wheat makes people feel. So
yeah, I was wondering about that, whether it's an increased awareness or an increased incidence.
So, yeah, I mean, celiac disease is a genetic disease as well, so I was predisposed because it's in my family. But I think there is a massive, you know, celiac UK just themselves have done a lot to raise the awareness, but also people like Gwyneth Paltrow and people writing books like Wheat Belly, and these kind of things where they're really raising awareness about how wheat makes you feel. So, yeah, I think there's a lot to do with that.
So this is excellent news for your business, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. It's great timing. Yeah, I mean, I started the business before this real bandwagon kind of wave took off, and it was born purely out of the fact that eating as a celiac, when you don't know many other people who are gluten free, this is before it was kind of super cool to be gluten free or even acceptable, you know, to be able to go in a restaurant and say, oh, I've got celiac disease, and the waiters go, what? You are? I mean, I got called a celeriac at a wedding in the front of the whole wedding party, you know, so it was not cool to be...
Well, hold on. Are you a celeriac?
No, I'm not a gluten-free vegetable, okay. No. So basically, it was a bit depressing, you know, and, you know, being passionate about food and desperate to find the place that I actually wanted to eat and celebrate those places, I just wanted to take my friends with me. And I grew the business basically out of Twitter meetups, so people that I knew on Twitter who were also gluten-free, who also happened to live in London, and we would just get together and eat. And so I kind of formalised that, but also giving people an opportunity to not worry about the food. So you go out for dinner, you're like, okay, so what can I have, what options are there? And then they'll bring the wrong thing, they'll bring a salad with the croutons, or they'll stick a wafer in your ice cream. And actually,
tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I organise it. We go to places that are super, super gluten-free aware, or they're entirely gluten-free. We went to a bakery up in Islington called Artisan Gluten-Free Bakery, which is 100% gluten-free. So we went there, we had dinner. So nobody has to worry, and actually it's really, really nice to be able to do that. And then it's just about connecting people, getting people offline. You know, there's, like I said in the beginning, there's lots of people who are gluten-free for whatever reasons. I don't care why they are, but it's just about showing people there are some really good options out there that aren't that very narrow aisle of the supermarket that everybody stands and looks at a bit depressed.
So part of this then presumably is a reassurance that whatever the food is, it's going to be okay. But also, it sounds as though taking the pressure off having to do the politics around it must be a big relief.
Totally, yeah. So to just let somebody else, you know, being a celiac, people know I take it seriously, and also got, you know, 20 odd people that are gluten intolerant or whatever for dinner, you're going to make sure it is safe for them. Yeah, so...
Can we talk strategy?
Yeah.
Because the hen party scenario sounded like a particularly tricky one to me, because the last thing anybody wants to be thinking about on their hen night, they want to be thinking about getting hammered and not thinking about anything at all. And then along comes a gluten-free person.
Yeah.
What's your strategy for approaching a difficult situation like that?
So, get in at the beginning. I mean, if they're friends of yours, people probably know you have a dietary requirement anyway.
Yeah, that's easy. But if you're a more distant friend of the person in question, you've got trouble, haven't you?
Make yourself known. I mean, that's the biggest thing is in dealing with living gluten-free anyway, is you do have to talk about it. So talk about it as soon as possible, as soon as the invite comes, speak to the people. I mean, luckily nowadays it is pretty straightforward. Most people can cater. It's just about how well they do it. But yeah, just be really open. And I would personally get in touch with the venue beforehand, just to reiterate it and make yourself known, you know.
You'd open up a back channel.
Yeah, totally. So I never trust anybody, so it's... Well, not never trust anybody, but I just always want to be sure. It's better to be organised and make sure that people are aware that you're coming. And because also, quite often, then they'll get really cool stuff for you. So they'll buy in some nice gluten-free bread from some amazing bakery in London, or they'll get, you know, they'll make everybody's cakes gluten-free on some afternoon tea or something. So yeah, you can often, with a bit of warning, restaurants are better able to cater for you.
I've heard that the vegetarian and vegan situations where somebody announces that they are one of those things and they get given like a leaf of lettuce in place of the main meal. Do you run across stuff like that?
Oh, all the time, yeah. It's the salad option is quite often the only thing you can eat, or yeah, like meat and no chips. Like you go, like go to, I've been to places where you get offered, oh yeah, you can have the steak, what about the chips? What do you mean about the chips? So the chips, what are they fried with other things like onion wings? Because that will cause contamination. Oh yeah, okay, so you can have a salad. Oh right, chips are no good. You know, all the fun things disappear. So yeah, quite often you can be presented with the boring options. But less so now.
Well, I guess it would be a good opportunity there to fly the flag for some places around town that are doing it well.
Yeah, oh, there's an amazing amount. Actually, in preparing for today, I was... The list was getting a bit long.
How are we going to do? Are we going to split London up a little bit?
Yeah, we can do that.
Where should we go first?
So there's like a...
Well, I'm glancing down at your notes here. You've got a list as long as your arm.
But this is nothing. This is what I remembered off the top of my head this morning. Kind of weirdly, Borough Market and London Bridge is a real hive of gluten-free options. Actually, you've got Roast, the restaurant above the market. They do, so their brunch and their breakfast option, which is, you know, breakfast is one of the most wheaty, you know, pastries and toast and waffles and things, stuff that you can't, it's normally the most boring option. You get yogurt and fruit and no granola. They do really good brunch and breakfast options. but also they have a separate toaster, so they really get it. So they got gluten-free bread and a separate toaster, and they give you a separate jam and everything. So, and the food is just amazing in there. They even have a gluten-free kind of granola thing from one of the producers called Mini Magoo downstairs. They do a gluten-free breakfast stuff, so they serve that. That's really good. And also at Borough Market as well, there's loads of producers who are doing lots of gluten-free stuff. There's a bakery there. There's another restaurant called Elliot's. So the owner of Elliot's is a celiac, and he was the chef there when it first opened. So they've just got a really good awareness. And there's lots of very naturally gluten-free food that doesn't need a label, but it's all really, really good. And who else? And the Ginger Pigs do gluten-free sausages. The sausages, a lot of them you can't have because they use rust as a binder and a filler.
Oh, wow, that's a little hidden one, isn't it?
Yeah. So their meat's amazing anyway, but a lot of their sausages are gluten-free, so they're really good. And then there's also another restaurant that's not long been open called Rocket, and it's on the Borough Market edge.
Are you saying Rocket?
Wocket.
Wocket.
So Wocket.
Oh, I see.
Wocket. Yeah. And they do like fresh kind of stir fries, which normally I would avoid like the plague, but actually what they do, they're really aware of the cross contamination issue, because with things like stir fries you use soy sauce, and soy sauce has wheat in it.
Oh, there's sneaky gluten everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere. So they use a tamari, and they've got loads of gluten-free options and noodles and stuff like that. So they've got lots and lots of options. So that's another really inclusive place to eat out in Borough Market as well.
If you were catering for a person with this requirement in your home, you've got to read up on it first, haven't you? This is not obvious stuff.
Well, you can just go to the supermarket and buy half the free-from aisle.
Yeah, but you'd never think of soy sauce.
You wouldn't think of soy sauce. There are things that are really hidden, yeah. Soy sauce is the one that people don't often think about. Yeah, I mean, also things like cross contamination. So using your toaster at home will have breadcrumbs in it, and the butter might have breadcrumbs in, so you have to kind of separate.
Let's get away from Borough Market then.
And then Islington's got lots of gluten-free options as well. So you've got the Artisan Gluten-Free Bakery. So they're a dedicated bakery. They do the best bread ever. It's unbelievable. Really just mainstream kind of white loaves, brown loaves, kind of multi-seed. They do baguettes. Their scones are very good as well. That's really hard to do. So they've got a cafe, but they also supply wholesalers to kind of other restaurants and other shops.
Whereabouts are they in Islington?
They're on Upper Street. I'm at the Highbury end of Upper Street. You've also got another 100% gluten-free place on the other end in Angel called Niche, which is a gluten-free restaurant. So they're like a brasserie-type restaurant, so they do burgers and fried chicken and steaks, but everything is gluten-free, but you wouldn't necessarily know it, so that's a really good little place as well.
Just while you mention it, because my stomach is now reliably rumbling as I think of the fried chicken, this kind of food, if you don't need to go gluten-free, would you still recommend it, or are you making sacrifices unnecessarily?
The places I recommend are the places I would take my gluten-eating friends, for sure. Because there are some places out there where it's just rubbish. Or you can tell. Not necessarily rubbish, but the phrase I quite often hear is, oh, it's good for gluten-free. And you're like, yeah, but that doesn't mean I want to eat it. It's kind of...
As you know, if you've ever eaten diabetic chocolate, you know, nearly, but...
Doesn't taste so. So for me, I'm all about finding the places where, you know, or my husband, he's what we call normal. And he is not very forgiving of rubbish food. He likes good food, and so, you know, he's not going to come out to dinner with me if it's below par. So fried chicken, for example, there's a restaurant called Bird, and they started in Shoreditch. They've just opened in Camden as well. And it's fried chicken, and it just so happens that the perfect recipe they found after traveling around America happens to be gluten free. So. It's not fried with anything else. It's totally gluten-free. So you can have fried chicken, which was, like, insane. It was a couple of years ago I went for the first time, and we had, at my event we had there, we literally had people, like, diving into the table, like, kind of scrabbling around for, like, these big hunks of kind of fried chicken. It was really good of its own accord, but actually it was gluten-free as well, so...
These must be amazing mixes then, because if the only thing that people have got in common on the face of it is this particular dietary requirement, it must make for very various gatherings.
It does, but actually food is really uniting, isn't it? When people get together and the common theme is food, it really brings people together, and there's you know, I never have to work very hard in networking particularly. People are just straight in going, oh, where do you live? Where would you recommend? I've tried this product recently. Have you been here? You know, or I had this awful, you know, why are you gluten-free? What's your story? It's a really kind of personal journey everybody's on, and everybody's just desperate to kind of find out more places they can eat and more things they can buy. So yeah, it's actually really, they're really high energy events. Everyone gets really excited, but, and partly because I want to take people places that are really exciting. It's not just going to a restaurant that happens to serve gluten-free pasta. It's about going to an entirely gluten-free bakery where you can literally devour the cake counter. It's not, you have the one,
no, you can't literally devour the cake counter.
People did, they were like taking stuff home, you know. It's that opportunity to have whatever you like. There is no limit on the choices that you can make. Absolutely, you know, yeah, it's very exciting when it's cake.
Do people then, I'm not sure whether to read this into what you're saying, but do people feel a little bit on their own until they connect up like this?
Yeah, I think it can. I mean, social media is amazing now, but it's still quite a lonely experience to be, and it's a bit depressing. You know, you kind of go out for dinner with friends and you're the fussy eater and you're the one that's got to get a special menu that sits there, you know, looking, trying to decipher the symbols that they put, whether it's a GS or a GF or whatever. You know, it can be a bit depressing. And it is it's massively easier now, but it's high risk for us to eat out. So then it can become quite stressful.
Well, come back to one or two more recommendations for London in just a sec, what with being a London show and all that. But the thing that's been hovering over the back of my mind throughout the conversation is, oh boy, you wouldn't want to live in France.
Oh no, it's fine in France.
It's fine in France.
Yeah.
They have fluffy bread for every
meal. Fluffy bread, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And it's quite hard. It's quite hard to go to France and drool over the baguettes. But to go somewhere like Paris now, I think there's 3 gluten-free bakeries in Paris. At least a couple of dedicated gluten-free restaurants. I know a lady that's running cookery classes in Paris that are gluten-free. Yeah, so even in France, it's happening. Italy is the best place to go to, because the Italians, for a long time, would test every child for celiac disease, so before the age of 5. So they've got this insane, they don't do it anymore, but they've got this insane awareness. So when you say, oh, I'm going on holiday to Italy, they're like, isn't that like a nightmare for you? Like pasta and pizza and bread. And like, no, because actually they've got an amazing awareness. So you will go to a restaurant and they'll be like, I'll say, have you got anything gluten-free? Like, oh, yeah, it's fine. I was getting apologies on my last holiday where they were saying, I've only got gluten-free penne today. I normally have a rain, or I normally make my own gluten-free pasta, but I haven't got any today. It's amazing.
Why are they so ahead of the game?
I think because they were testing.
Yeah, but why would that be?
I think that's a good question. I don't know, actually. They haven't. I mean, given the amount of wheat they consume, you know, they have literally pasta every day. I think maybe there's, I don't know if there's a higher incidence of it at all, actually. It's just greater awareness for some reason. I'm not sure. I'll have to find out.
Let's come back to our capital.
So bakeries and afternoon tea are kind of the sought after recommendations quite often, because obviously it's bready and wheaty. There's a new bakery called Manaju, and that's over in Clapham Junction, and that's, well, it's not a bakery actually, it's a patisserie. It's beautiful, very, very delicate sponges and light kind of moussey foam things, and beautiful presentation. Again, everything's entirely gluten-free. They also do some dairy-free and some sugar-free stuff as well, but you really wouldn't know the difference on that. They're amazing. There is actually one of my strategies quite often as well is going to the more Antipodean Aussie style cafes and restaurants. So for example, Workshop Coffee, and Ozone Coffee Shop as well. So they always, again, a bit like the Italians, they're always further ahead of the game in terms of awareness over in Australia and New Zealand. And the Workshop do make their own gluten-free breads only at their Clerkenwell store. And you can have French toast, or you can have Eggs Benedict or something. So they're really good and really aware of it. And my absolute favourite, huge shout out to Honest Burgers. Because burger without a bun is not a burger. And that's only happened in the last few years. So you used to go to a burger, like somewhere like one of the bigger kind of gourmet chains, and they would serve it with salad.
Well, I knew that was coming.
Serve burger with salad without the bun, and you'd have to eat it with a knife and fork. Now, my other confession is I used to be a product developer for a fast food restaurant.
I think you're kind of evil. I think you,
Yeah, I've gone from one side to the other. I've done it all. Yeah, so like to be presented with a burger with a knife and fork and a salad is not a burger, I'm sorry. So recently, in the last couple of years, people have started getting gluten-free buns, and Honest Burgers were one of the first because they started out in Brixton Village and they were opposite a gluten-free bakery that sadly is no more. So they started supplying them with gluten-free buns. And then they were like, became like a mecca. So I had friends from out of town who would come to London for the weekend, and they would head to Brixton Village and they would queue up at Honest Burgers because they could have a proper burger because the chips were gluten-free and everything was gluten-free. So great. Basically, as they've grown, they've got more and more popular. And then at one point, they did a special, one of their special burgers, and it was using beer or something, and they had, it caused a real issue with cross-contamination. So basically, it meant that we couldn't eat there. And there was absolute uproar on social media, and they kind of got it. They were like, okay, people really like to be able to have a gluten-free option, and it was, you know, bringing everybody with them. So now everything, bar a few specials that aren't going to cross-contaminate the whole menu. So you can have onion rings, which are gluten-free, the chips are gluten-free, the specials, the bun is gluten-free. They've always got gluten-free buns in all their stores. So, yeah, they are awesome. And they were one of the originals as well. So, yeah, highly recommend those guys.
It's a bit late in the podcast, this, but if you were playing the Londonist Out Loud drinking game using the phrase gluten-free this week, I would strongly advise you stop and seek medical attention immediately. Something I've been noticing with the list of places we've been talking about there, I think I've got I can see a commonality between the characters of those areas. I'm sort of expecting like Stoke Newington or Walthamstow Village, places like that, to appear on the list.
Oh yeah, I mean, I live in South East London, so I have a bias that way. But yeah, there's just, I mean, that, I can't keep up with where is opening and where all the options are. There's so much. There's a lot in Hackney as well.
Yeah, well, I was wondering about that because obviously there's this range of conditions and no respecters of class or economic circumstances. So are you seeing gluten-free options available in places where there's not so much money around?
Yeah, well, partly because of the chains, you know, the same. Well, some of the chains are even accredited, so you can get accreditation from Celiac UK, so they will come into your restaurant and check to see what processes you have in place in order to make sure that the food is gluten free. So you can get accreditation. So a lot of the chain, am I allowed to mention chains?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, we definitely should.
So, you know, places like Carluccio's and La Tasca, and a lot, I can't even think of any of the other ones, I don't go to a lot of them, but they're getting accreditation. So, you know, like, it's really quite straightforward to be able to go and eat out gluten free. The kind of the more exciting places actually tend to be on the periphery. So, like, for example, the Manajou Bakery, you know, it's in Clapham Junction. There's not really anything else around there. They're not in the kind of central place. Although saying that, an ice cream place, so an entirely free from allergens ice cream shop, has just opened in Soho, and it is dairy-free, gluten-free, nut-free. So the woman that owns it is... her son is allergic to nuts and a couple of other things, so it's completely gluten-free, which you would think, you know, in terms of ice cream, you'd be like, so what? You know, there's no gluten in ice cream. But what it means is that you can have the cones, you can have a lot of toppings and things like, you know, cookie doughs or Oreo ice cream. You literally, you have, again, it's that thing of having full spectrum of choice. You can eat anything. So, but she's just opened in Soho, so they're going all over the place.
If you were going to impress somebody visiting the capital, yeah, where would you take them?
Where would I take them to impress them?
Well, hang on. It's just occurred to me, where would you want them to take you? Where would you, if they were standing you a mirror, where would you want them to take you?
That's a good question.
I like the way that skewed the answer.
To choose one place is like, okay. That's a really hard question. This is the thing, there's so much choice now. No, I know where I'd go. I'd go to the Truscott Arms. The Truscott Arms is a gastropub and restaurant up in Maida Vale. You know, again, up in kind of on the outskirts. The owner has a celiac father-in-law, celiac sister-in-law, And so basically most of the menu bar like two or three things are gluten free. So that includes things like Sunday lunch. So your gravy, your Yorkshire puddings, the whole shebang. Puddings, there's normally one thing you can't have maybe, but even stuff like the crumbles would be gluten free. They're absolutely amazing. And then there's proper downstairs in the bar that's proper pub food. So you're talking fish and chips and burgers and onion rings and steak and chips with the chips and all the really bad stuff that is really satisfying and really good. But they're, yeah, absolutely amazing. And they've won things like sustainable restaurant things, and they're amazing on all levels, but also they are mostly gluten-free as well. So yeah, I'd go there and eat there all day.
What greater endorsement could you want for any eating establishment? If somebody's interested in keying into gluten-free gatherings, I'm guessing Google will reveal all.
Yeah, it comes to the top, yeah. So no, the website's glutenfreegathering.co.uk, and I run events completely sporadically. There's no schedule, but it's when I find somewhere that's really exciting that I want to take the gluten-free community to. I invite speakers along, so it's not just dinner. It's a much richer event than that. We have dinner, we have speakers, so I get people from the free-from community, so whether they're bakers or they're cookery teachers or they're activists or somebody with a really strong opinion about something, to come and talk to us about what they're up to. We have goodie bags, and we, yeah, lots of sharing and usually competitions and stuff to win. So everything is gluten free.
Really good. You've opened up a complete new perspective on London. I love it when that happens. Thank you for bringing us here from the Good Life Eatery in Sloane Avenue. Kim Smith, thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Steve. My heart aches for some
far off place, no one cut it. And that's all for this week. My thanks for this week to Kim Smith. Thanks to Bernie Barclay. Theme and incidental music was by Songs from the Howling Sea. I meant Quentin Wolfe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.